Yesterday, just in passing at 3 o'clock, I had mentioned what was trending on my Twitter feed. And so I'll relay it to you if you missed yesterday. So there is a engineer from Google that believes a research system for generating chatbots has achieved sentience. But the company, meaning Google, says, nope, he's wrong. He's mistaken. And they placed him on paid leave after he took his case public. I think they've since fired this guy. His name is Blake Lemoine, I believe. And if I'm mispronouncing Blake's last name, I do apologize. But the whole, is this software aware, has got me thinking. And in fact, anytime I bring it up to other people, it's sci-fi movies run through your head. And we reached out to NDSU computer science professor, Dr. Ann Denton, joins me in studio. And I appreciate it, Dr. Denton. How are you?
Fine, thanks. And thanks for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate because this fascinates me. I know there's, because maybe I'm kind of a sci-fi geek myself. So when I read something like this, your mind instantly goes to all those terrible 80s movies that, okay, well, this is how it starts, right? Explain, you teach computer science. You teach a variety of things. In fact, let's start there. You're at NDSU. What's your background when it comes to computer technology?
I'm a professor in the computer science department. A long, long time ago, I started out in physics and then later switched to computer science. I have been involved with data, databases, data science, a lot of things surrounding data for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. In the last 5 years or so, I've increasingly switched also to ethics questions. So I have been teaching a social implications class, which actually does discuss some of those sci-fi issues. I actually let students, for the main course project, is a book review. And I would say probably a third to a half of the students pick a sci-fi book. I know it's around around half, maybe even more, who pick sci-fi books and discuss them in terms of ethics. And I mean, I will say that for these way out there scenarios, sometimes those fiction works delve into that with more detail and so on than a lot of what we teach in class. So I actually think that's really good way to get into this topic.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's like, is that unsettling or is that comforting? That, hey, all these sci-fi movies you've seen, yeah, some of them dive in deeper than what we're able to. Let's go into this scenario, because the whole ethics thing, we could have a whole conversation about that. In fact, we'll bring that in here. Did you get a chance to follow? So Google is this language model for dialogue applications, or Lambda for short. And this engineer is saying it persuaded him that the program deserves to be treated as a sentient being, saying, okay, well, he's got feelings. I'm not a property of Google. I'm, in fact, an employee of Google. Give me your take on this revelation from this whistleblower, this engineer.
So I feel conflicted about this. So on the one hand, I have concerns about their language models. In fact, this is not the first engineer who has been released in some form. There were two last year, Timnit Gebru and Margaret Mitchell, who were not just working on this as engineers, but actually as researchers. And this was not the dialogue application. This was the more general question answering. So the sort of thing that if you ask a question in a Google search field, now you don't just get links. You actually get an attempt at an answer. And they had issues with that, and I'll get back to those issues. But so I am very well aware that these language models can create issues. The one that Blake brought up is not the one that really is at the forefront of my concerns.
Okay.
And the thing is this. So what he's working on is sort of as what I would see as a crossover between those question answering language models and a chatbot. So it uses the large language models at Google. They use millions of conversations and whatnot. And they build models from that can respond like a human. And what he thought saw happening was that he thought, well, this is responding as if it really has gained consciousness. Mm-hmm. Sentience is even a step beyond consciousness. That seems odd to me because, I mean, sentience is something that comes out of our experiences of pain and fear and joy. And from these things and through conversation, we build this concept of self. And when I've seen sentience being discussed, it's usually things like, well, noticing that chimpanzees feel the same fear and pain and may show self-awareness, maybe we shouldn't treat them like objects. Mm-hmm. That's what I see as sentience. I don't see that with this AI. So where I do see the concerns is that the model is based on what's out there and every bias is represented in there. So, and this is what ended the careers of at Google of Dominic Gabriel and Margaret Mitchell, that they said, well, I mean, if you build something based on all the biases that are out there, you are regurgitating biases.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the case for this too, this dialogue application. I mean, if you were to train this in a society with slavery, all these AIs would consider slavery okay. That's just how they're built. And there's no easy way to fix that.
So when they're gathering, you talk about, is this primarily just data points, these algorithms? So if I'm out here and I do the Google search and then it fills in, you know, what they expect me to be asking a question of, are they pulling from just commonly searched things within that area? Is that how it's filling in? Or is there so much bigger than that my mind's already blown?
So these language models, they are built overnight with long large sets of data. And the moment you ask something, they just use this representation somehow, and it's there already. It's trained already. So with what we say, it's trained, and you're just using whatever the prediction is. So it's not going about and then starting to pull things in. That would be too slow. So they build, and I mean, in the most basic way, what happens is you take these bodies of text, and then you come up with a representation that doesn't represent individual words, but words in their context, and then a particular question somewhere is in that space. So that's how they've gotten over all these issues that people had with machine translation in the 80s. That's not an issue anymore because now they don't work with individual words. They use words in their context. Whatever that context is, with every bias and everything that we use.
Dr. Ann Denton is my guest. She's a professor up at NDSU Computer Sciences. You had mentioned I guess I need to take a break here. You got a little bit more time for me?
Sure.
Very good. I've got a lot of questions. I could be having this conversation all day, unfortunately. So we'll see how much time Dr. Denton has. Your questions, if you want to send those in to 35270. I see the text club is blowing up about this topic. I'll come back to that right after this here on KFGO.
Mama used to sing to me.
Dr. Ann Denton, my guest, NDSU Computer Science professor, explaining things to me as I'm 5, which is I need in this very complex issue when it comes to this Google situation. You talked about the instance before, not the one that we're talking about just because it came up over the weekend. It's more concerning because they talked about some implied biases in these word programs. Why does Google seem like it's got a trend of trying to silence engineers and these individuals that are raising some red flags?
Well, I'm not working with Google. I don't know. Clearly, anytime somebody would go out and say that the business model of the company they're working for is flawed, I don't think any company really likes that very much. I mean,
does this add a whole other when you go as public with something as because. Well, as I was saying, when you start throwing this out there, people's minds go to that, okay, this is how, you know, it's as most dire situation, this is how it's going to start here. I mean, does that add for them to say, look, even if it's something about just talking about perceived biases, you got to get going?
Well, I see those two instances as different. So in this particular case, I think they're just saying he is misrepresenting the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So what this falls in the whistleblowing category, of course, and I teach social implications. And I always tell students, I mean, sure, there are cases where whistleblowing is the thing if you've explored every internal route, but it can lead to being let go. So in this particular case, I think they also really felt that he was saying things that were not really consensus research and so on consensus, because I mean, if this had been self-driving car, the Roomba, little vacuum cleaner, and the self-driving car didn't want to be turned off, or the Roomba would evade you to not be turned off because it has the awareness that being turned off isn't, it can't do anything anymore, that would be really concerning. This was not a physical system. So I do think that in the social implications class, we talk a lot about self-driving cars and this kind of scenario, but there was no such thing here. Neither, the other thing we talk about is general intelligence. So if this robot had strategized what it needed to do in order to avoid being turned off, that would also have been really concerning to me. Uh-huh. But neither of those two things really happened. It was really just regurgitating everything it was seeing in these conversations from which it was learning, from these millions of dialogues.
Those two scenarios you just talked about with the self-driving car, you and your class talking about that, or a Roomba, to make it more simple here, how far off is it from anywhere getting close to that? Because I have a sense it's not anywhere in the near future, but with the exponential growth, it seems, of our capacity to collect data, to do things that we all, I think, voluntarily put more information out there. I mean, is this rapidly escalating, or?
So there is was this movie, The Social Dilemma, that talked about some such things. And I thought the summary there was seemed intuitive to me, which is that all the general intelligence discussions have been about robots reaching the human strengths in reasoning, and we are not there. But the robotic systems, including bots, have reached the level of human weakness, and that may be just as bad. So I think that it might be distracting. And human weakness, I mean, that is about being manipulated, about propaganda and so on. And I mean, bias is part of that manipulation. So I think the manipulation is the bigger risk. I think we are still somewhat away from the reaching the human strength.
Well, on the manipulation side, as a consumer or as a user of these platforms, you've been teaching now for, you mentioned, over 20 years on some of these ethics data. Has the general public become more aware of how they're, quite frankly, manipulated on these platforms, whether it's Google, YouTube, how the data, the biases, or are we just trusting everything we see still?
So I will say that one of the most enjoyable experience in my entire career has been that for the past year, I have taught a social implications class where every class period, I let the students discuss on the pro and the con side. And it's questions like, what is more likely to manipulate you, the TV or Facebook, basically? That sort of question. And I've been blown away by how much the students can contribute. So certainly our computer science students do have a very high level of awareness of these things. Does the level of awareness propagate faster than the manipulation? Well, that's always, and I mean, one of the things I also like to tell my students, I'm from Germany, and so I always have plenty of bad examples of propaganda from the 1930s and early 40s in Germany. And I mean, propaganda was terrible there. So I mean, to the point there was a joke. Some of the propaganda survived the system that created it. It's crazy how manipulative regimes manage to use propaganda. That was the case 100 years ago.
Dr. Denton, do you have just 5 more minutes for me after this? This weather update?
Sure.
Very good. Dr. Ann Denton, she's a professor up at NDSU Computer Science. I just got one more question, but I got to get you caught up with KFGO News. We'll check it with Rusty Alverson also right after this.
This is Afternoons Live with Tyler Axness on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 KFGO.
Well, we asked for 10 minutes, and we're asking now almost an hour of Dr. Ann Denton's time, Professor NDSU Computer Science. And Dr. Denton, where we had left off, we're talking about ethics, we're talking about misinformation, and now we've had a great conversation off air. Let's replicate it on air. You're from Germany.
Yes.
And you were talking about, you know, your father's time and when he was raised and being a part of radio and television and all that, and the use of that technology to spread the word. Explain that to the audience and how it translates, I think, now to how easily things are spread on Facebook, social media in general.
Yeah, I think it is very important to understand that anytime there is a new technology, there is potential for manipulation and for propaganda and any of those things. So, my dad's dad had a workshop for radio at the time. It started going into TV after the war. But during the Holocaust, my dad's dad, he was repairing these radios and was very aware of how they had these what was called Volksempfänger, like Volkswagen, so people's receivers that basically everybody got very inexpensively, and they had them in their living rooms, and that was a major mechanism for how the Holocaust could happen, because people had no defenses towards there suddenly being a voice in the middle of their living room. And I do think any time that there is a new technology, we just don't know where it goes, and it can amplify dangerous political ideas.
When you talk about new technology, because, you know, I keep going back to social media because I think I've seen more now of the negative side of it over the last. I was in college when Facebook started, and I had to have a .edu at NDSU. And it was confined to just that. And then once they opened up the gates, said, you know what, as long as you got an email address and an internet connection, have at it here. And now how that's evolved from, here's what my family did on vacation, into really just people being, quite frankly, angry, sharing things on there. Is it still considered a new technology, this social media platform? Are we still learning as we go here? Give me your thoughts on this as a new technology.
Oh, I absolutely think we do not yet know where that goes. And I mean, keep in mind, the radio had been around for a while when the Holocaust happened too. I mean, it takes a little while to really become apparent what the potential for manipulation is. And of course, social media are really different from these broadcast media, which they have. It's a few people in broadcast media spreading a message, whereas on social media you have all these many individual interactions, and that's got advantages and disadvantages, because on the one hand you have less control over the content. On the other hand, I mean, we're talking about this too off air, this phenomenon. Well, this is what my friend is thinking, and I mean,
yeah, we learned a lot about each other over the last few years, haven't we?
And that's something. I think that's on the positive side of social media, but where is it going to go? I don't know. I mean, the technologists don't necessarily know that, and I think that's also important to understand.
Well, and, you know, we have a war going on in Ukraine right now that we're watching in first perspective. I mean, you have people on the ground, you know, residents of Ukraine videotaping this on TikTok, uploading it. There was a high-profile trial of celebrities that were forced onto us through social media, and I really think that changed how people perceived both individuals on trial there, and then the outcome and how it's changed reputations there. I think how we're consuming real world events in real time has really changed how we're going, and I don't see it slowing down at all here. So with that, in the industry itself, whether Google is how we started here, where they fired people for whistleblowing, say, do they have any checks on themselves, or are they just kind of, people talk about big tech, you know, and there's not a lot of oversight right now. Is that true? Do they have some self-governance, or is it, well, we're going to see how far we could push this limit and hope that your Roomba doesn't decide that it's going to avoid you to not want to get shut off?
Well, I mean, the industry has been lobbying for self-governance, and that has all the advantages and risks that self-governance has. I mean, if you had politicians in the game, on the one hand, they would be independent. They wouldn't have the self-interest. But on the other hand, they wouldn't understand the issues as well. I have spent the past year, anytime I teach, I put the pro and I put the con, and this would be a perfect topic for my class. And I'm sure there would be, I think I have asked questions somewhat like this. There would be plenty of arguments on the pro side, plenty of arguments on the con side. Should there be somebody outside the industry who is, who has a say?
Dr. Denton, is there anything else I missed? I am so appreciative of your time. Like I said, I asked for 10 and he gave us much more than that. I could go all afternoon visiting with you about this, but what else did I miss that you want to get out to the public about, whether it's Google, self-awareness of computers? The floor is yours.
Oh, I think this was really a great conversation, and I really like the direction in which it went, because I think that really the manipulation propaganda portions are the riskier ones than the self-awareness. I think that we are not yet that close to these Terminator scenarios. And, I mean, the current Google case, I mean, that AI, it wasn't in a robot. If it had been in a robot, my opinion would be different. So I think that, yes, there are a lot of concerns. I think it deserves a lot of discussion. Was the current one the most important? I'm not convinced.
Very good. Well, I had a lot of my friends talking, so I'm like, okay, and I'm fascinated by it. And because I keep getting messages about how much everyone else enjoyed the conversation, you just got to promise to answer the phone when we call again. Love sure. to have you back on the show.
I would gladly come back. I really enjoy this. I enjoy coming here, and this is a topic I really care a lot about.
Well, it's been fun, and we'll do it again soon. Till then, get out and enjoy that that afternoon, all right?
Thank you.
Dr. Ann Denton, professor at NDSU. I'm going to get you a weather update from Too Tall Tom. We'll come back right after this.